Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Good morning, boys.
And Ben Roy Turner.
Happy birthday, Kane and Lynch 2. Oh, it came out today in 2010.
You know, he said he had something to announce, he had something to show on the podcast, and of course it's Kane and fecking Lynch 2. Have you been going back to it again?
Celebration, mate. It's not a day for celebration. Put that away. Lock it away. It's too old.
Run away.
Now. Put it in its own case.
Josh gets a Series X, Ben Roy continues to have Kane and Lynch too. It's victories all around. But yeah, for this week's podcast, because we did a question and answer thing last week, we just put out a tweet just asking people what they'd like us to talk about, and had a massive response to that, so I thought we'd just carry it over to this week. Plus, there's not many new games out for at least another few days. The likes of 12 Minutes, Ghost of Tsushima's Director's Cut expansion will be dropping in the next few days, so we're just going to dive into the rest of the questions. First one from JB Patrol, so JB yourself, watch out, pal. What is your favorite video game movie? I actually quite like the Silent Hill movie and Prince of Persia. Now, I've not seen Prince of Persia, but I would totally back Silent Hill as well.
Ben Roy has to take this away. I saw him being quite humble and reserved there. Letting me speak first when all I want to hear is him talk up Resident Evil once more.
Look, I love the first Resident Evil movie. It scared me to death as a child. I might have shed a tear in fear or so, because I was 10, whatever it was when it came out. I loved the first one. The second one was hilarious. I watched a dodgy DVD of it, just hearing characters saying GTA mother effer when they run over naked booby.
I've seen that meme booby so zombies. Much.
Yeah. And it's just like, I was like, what did this start that? And then of course I've got to go with the Josh Brown Patrol. I love the first Silent Hill movie as well. I think that's class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the first Silent Hill is actually genuinely very well shot. I think they nailed the look of the game. They actually replicated some of the camera angles from the game, which I thought was really cool. Is there any, just for quickly mentioning all the Resident Evils, is there any Resident Evil movie that you would genuinely hold up as a like genuinely good film? You don't need to be a fan.
Yeah, I would say
the first one. You don't need to be a fan of the games. You can just go to the first one.
I think the entire series almost works better if you're not a fan of the games because of how much it butchers the source material.
That's its own choice.
There's a certain level of pleasure to be had in that. But yeah, I think the first one is genuinely really quite good. I think it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I like its internal logic. I like its aesthetics. The characters are good. Colin Salmon is there. And the music's mint as well. I think the first one is great. That would be my shout for the answer to this question. However,
yes.
I do want to throw something in that I think might just cause a rift between
Super
you two.
Mario Bros.
Because I recently, that's an entirely different thing. Super Mario Brothers the movie, yes, that's going to be in there. But more importantly, the most recent Mortal Kombat, which I thought
was a film.
I really enjoyed that. And
I liked it.
I would hold that up there as perhaps one of the better ones, maybe.
I wouldn't. I would absolutely bury it. I hated it. I thought it was terrible. But carry on.
I've got a better rift than that, Josh, not to one-up you. The best piece of fun fantasy media ever created, Spirits of Inn, is also one that technologically pushed the industry forward, had a great voice cast. It looks a bit dated now. It looks better than all those Final Fantasy PS1 games. But I would recommend people watching that.
Yeah, I mean, I never went back to Spirits Within because it's not a Final Fantasy thing. It's
but Mortal Kombat's great as well.
Mortal Kombat's got a very good Sub-Zero. I was going to throw in because we tend to think of like video game movies as like the banter era, like the 2000s era. But to be honest, I really love Detective Pikachu. I think that would be my actual shout. I really like the idea of cyberpunk style Pokemon. I love the idea of just seeing like an actual world of Pokemon, like a realistically shot version of Pokemon. I think that's actually quite good. Monster Hunter was absolutely abysmal. I was just thinking of other like modern stuff.
It was pretty good. Tomb Raider was all right.
Tomb Raider is solid, yeah.
The most recent reboot, but also the very first one is kind of like a good dumb movie.
Oh, the Jolie one, like, yeah.
Is it Alicia Vikander one?
Perhaps. Alicia Vikander is the new one.
That's Hitman is also, the first Hitman movie is a weird point in time where I was Die Hard 4.0 was out and then that was out around the same time. It was like, you know, Timothy Oliphant, I think that's him. And just like, you know, it kind of works. And they play Hitman in the movie and they've got Teabag from Prison Break in here doing a bad Russian accent. Let's go.
The bit where they're on the train and they all just produce swords and have a sword fight. And I was like, what? Why? It's just from the back. But I feel like video game movies have got a lot better. Obviously, Sonic is an obvious one. I personally wasn't a massive fan of Sonic. Thought it was fine. But yeah, I think actual shouts would be Resident Evil, would be Silent Hill, would be Detective Pikachu. Next question from Voy, who says, do you think the next Saints Row will be balls to the wall like 3 and 4 or a bit more grounded in reality like 1 and 2? I don't think 2 was very grounded in reality. Here's hoping it for the latter and maybe a 1-2 remaster before the next installment. Where are you guys at on Saints Row?
It's funny, right? Because, you know, 2 was a big jump from 1, wasn't it? In terms of
you had the poop cannon where you cover houses in poop.
Totally, but I do understand what they're saying because in context and in reference to the things that came after, like it does seem tame. Like you look at 1 and 2 as almost the gritty versions of Saints Row until it got properly off the wall. And now we're so far beyond where 2 even was when that was being celebrated for being wacky and weird and all of that jazz. I don't think we ever go back. I don't think we ever go back at this point. We might rein it in from where we were previously going to literal hell for a little bit, for instance. I don't know if we'll go down that extent again with a proper sequel, but I definitely think we're going to get something in line with Saints Row 3 or Saints Row 4. You know, I feel like it's not losing the wackiness anytime soon because that's its USP at this point.
Well, for me, Saints Row's trajectory was just doing whatever GTA like wasn't, because you had like Saints Row 1, when it dropped, you had really cool like next gen graphics at the time. That was kind of what drew you in, and like the physics model was really cool. But then, you know, the more GTA then went serious, Saints Row then went wacky, and for me, Saints Row, the appeal of that was being like what San Andreas used to be to GTA. And if you missed that wackier side of GTA, you could just go and enjoy that with Saints Row. Like Saints 3 is one of my favorite games, and then I kind of thought that 4 was really enjoyable, but it was like the alien race was coming to Earth, and it was completely insane. And I never even really played Get Out of Hell. I did the very beginning of it. But for me, I don't know what the hell the identity of Saints Row is anymore. And I think that even franchises like Just Cause have proven that you can't just keep doing wacky banter AF. Like it's not going to keep going. Like we've done that, we've explored it. So I kind of wonder what the hell Saints Row even is at this point.
I only ever played 2 and I lived through the third vicariously through my Lord and Savior Ryan Davis back in the day. Just hear him talk about that game. Mm-hmm. But like I never really played 3 or 4, so I can't really tell. I have seen the power moment when you jump out of the plane, and I've sampled much of Keith David's work from those games. So I feel like I've got a lot out of it, jokingly aside. But no, I've not really played them, so I don't know.
Because what would get you in? Like someone who's more of like a casual fan.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, I'm trying to think. Has this series been embraced? Is it part of the Embracer blob of like properties that they own?
I don't think. Anyway, but I guess like overall, like, as like a franchise, like GTA. I mean, that was the thing. GTA took the biggest amount of time off across the 2010s, and that was also when Saints Row started getting like less and less releases, or like not really knowing exactly what it was. But in terms of going forward, I don't know. I think they might keep with the latter stuff because I think it'll be a weird swerve if they go back to just being like a basic crime sandbox game again.
I think they've got to, if they come back in a way and it continues, they've got to ground it a bit because you can't go more. You've got to bring it back down, haven't you, to then go big again sort of thing. So that would be my guess if I was someone, have it wacky and funny, but don't have it like super serial and then build up to another like apocalyptic event.
Yeah, I think they could go either way.
I've never actually finished a Saints Row game. I'm not a huge fan of the franchise. I think I've talked to you guys about it before. Like Saints Row 3, I couldn't get into.
I couldn't believe that when you said you didn't like 3. And I was like, I loved that game.
I got to it too late. You know, I got to it when it was free on Xbox Games with Gold at one point. So it was quite after the fact. Get out of hell, I didn't jive with. I'm not even sure if I played Saints Row 4 at all. Saints Row 2, I played around a friend's house. Saints Row 1, I started and then didn't finish because I just wanted to play GTA. It's been this franchise that I've put time into, but just never gotten much out of it. It's very, very odd. So I'm kind of with Benroy where I don't even know what they could do to deliver a game that appeals to me, because I just feel like the very fabric of it isn't my thing in a way.
I do wonder that, like, because GTA is so just GTA Online or GTA 5, if you want that again, either that makes publishers run for the hills because they can't compete with the numbers that GTA is doing, or you could do a nice, like, open world crime sandbox game, the likes of Sleeping Dogs, the likes of Saints Row. Like, there used to be these other, like, the true crime games, for example, and things like that. Like, there were viable alternatives to GTA for a while. It just feels like all that stuff went away.
Was that because it was cheaper to make the games back then and it didn't require like 6 billion people to code a tree and stuff in layman terms?
Totally. I mean, you know, all those games you mentioned aren't around anymore. As much as I like true crime, as much as I like Sleeping Dogs, you know, they tried to be these alternatives to GTA, and there was only really Saints Row that kind of like managed to have some longevity, and that was because it eventually ended up embracing aliens and wacky big dildos and stuff.
I think it's more like it would be on the publishers to like go up against GTA. Obviously there would be GTA comparisons, and I get why from a financial, you know, bean counting sense, they would just be like, well, we're clearly not going to be able to beat this, so let's not even try. But like the open world crime sandbox genre used to be a thing. It didn't used to just be GTA, and I feel like there is a way to go back to that. But yeah, in terms of a series identity, I feel like Saints Row is just lost at sea at this point. Like, no one responded to the get out of hell stuff, and there ain't a way you go from there. Next question is from Zach, who says, do you find it difficult to juggle multiple games at once? For me, if I'm playing a game and jump ship to a new one, I generally don't find myself going back to finish. Now, yes, but I mean, it depends. I don't necessarily find it difficult to juggle multiple games at once, but it's just like, I'll just play as much as possible, and then whatever latches on, I'll keep going. But I don't know what you guys are like. Josh, I know you're painfully devoted to finishing Code Veronica before you touch your Series X.
I totally am. You know, we've talked about this on our Monday show, Scott, before, about how we differ. So I'm excited to see what Benroy says. But yeah, for me, I can't play multiple games at once. I can play two at max, maybe three.
Seven, eight.
The third one is a multiplayer game, because otherwise I just get anxious that I'm not experiencing one of the games to its fullest potential. I feel like I'm not paying enough attention to it. And if I don't finish it, I'm the exact same as whoever asked this question, and then I'll just forget about it and I won't pick it up again. So I need to make sure I finish it, and that's why I've not really touched the Xbox Series X yet, because I've got the Forgotten City and I've got Code Veronica X almost completed. Like, I'm in the last stretch of both, and there is no way I will pick those back up if I start Ori on the Xbox or start Forza Horizon 4 on the Xbox. I'm going to finish these and then move my entire spirit and body to the next thing. That's how I like to do it. But Benroy, what's your game?
I kind of like, I have a few on the go, and I treat my games like, say, fresh veg or fresh fruit. You know, they're gonna go off in my brain, and I'm not gonna want to go back to them if I leave them sitting, and they're gonna stagnate.
Very fair.
So I personally, as I will go through a game and I will keep going back to it, and I will, if I choose to plan it, I will do. At the moment, I'm playing Chaos Free, but I'm also on a point where I've kind of slowed down with some games. I'm not really playing anything. I'm playing like a mission of or two of Chaos Fury a week at this point, and I'm playing like, say, PUBG with my friends, and then doing my Gears days and jumping into the Ascent with friends, and we finally got rid of Outriders, and we've done that now. But like, I really just have like the friend game, and then maybe two on the go, but I try to just do one at a time. If that sort of thing, like, I'm very sort of like, I wouldn't say methodical, because I'm like, oh yes, I'm methodical with my games, but I just like to really get one gut done and move on sort of thing. And in this era of when we've had nothing for a while, I almost like block out in my head, like, okay, like after Chaos Fury, coincidentally, with all these remakes that be announced, I'm going to GTA 3 next after this. So maybe if that gets announced before I finish that, then who knows? Sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. I like your criteria there, Ben Roy, and I think I would completely back it up. You've got the you game that you play solo, you've got the friend game, yeah. And sometimes you might have the partner game that you play with your partner, and then they're the three games that I can have in my orbit at any one given time. Otherwise, you've got to change them out and replace it with something
else. Too much,
I like
that.
Yeah.
Mine's just whatever the hard drive can hold. I'll put as many on there as possible. I'll jump between as many as possible. But I sort of have like I've mentioned this before on whatever different podcasts we've done, that I kind of have like a subconscious test. It's quite similar to what Benroy said about like if I leave it too long, then something will just rot and I'll just not be bothered anymore. But I'll just see what takes hold. Like something like I was replaying like Ghost of Tsushima and prep for the director's cut, and it's like that reminded me of like that's a game that I want to absolutely rinse. I want to see every single part of, and that'll be something that like latches on and has that subconscious kind of hold where I'm like, okay, I find myself thinking about it during the day and I go back to it. But also the thing that you said, Josh, like I always have like a multiplayer game. For the last 6 years it was Rocket League, and then it got replaced by Knockout City, and at the minute it's Windjammers 2 because the beta's out for it. So it's like I think that people have those little slots and you sort of just like dip between them, but it depends. If something's like a big enough deal, then it'll dominate everything else. Otherwise I'm the big dipper. I'm dipping left, right and center. Give me as many games as possible.
When it's big season, like I won't put off a new release for like a platinum. Let's just say like imagine if something comes straight out after like Far Cry 6, can't remember the schedule, then I'll finish Far Cry 6, move on, do that, and then come sort of rally back like it did with Death Stranding like the other year.
Obviously, I would have done a few hours of the new thing and then got back to the one I was going to finish and then slowly get through both of them.
I need to finish some games sometimes, or I just get a bit like, and want to not go back to them like we did with Outriders, and we took like, it felt like 7 years off that game and went back to it and finally got it sort of.
So what you did with Outriders is like what Josh did with Days Gone, where you're just like, you have to get through it. I don't have to get through it. I'll delete it. I've deleted Returnal. Like, F that game. I'm done. I don't care anymore. Like, it's not, the game sucks. Like, I'm sick of batting my face against it. And I have to move on from it. But yeah, I think that over time, especially with things like Game Pass, just being like, here's 50 games that you might want to get through. Everyone has to try and find ways to juggle them and stuff. Next question from Bobby Bobberson. Why do you think my parents are always fighting? I'm going to have to assume that it's because they're not subscribed to the podcast. Next question from Siobhan Robinson. If you could have three video game characters at your dinner party / to hang out with for the evening, who are you inviting and why?
Don't meet your heroes. Just don't do it. I want none. I don't want to disappoint any of them with how I am in real life. That's
exactly what they're like in real life. What if they've got absolutely no banter whatsoever?
Well, that's also it. I don't want to be a disappointment, and I also don't want them to be disappointing. So the answer is I want to just appreciate them through the screen and not get to know them at all. The same with celebrities, the same with musicians, because it will only disappoint us all.
I'll tell a weird story. I once met a semi-famous guitarist. I'm not going to name him, but I went up to him backstage. I was covering something at the event at the time, and I went up to him, and I walked up to him from the side, and I just sort of said, oh, hey, man, just I'll let you know I'm a massive fan, followed you for years. And do you know what he did? He farted on the spot, and then he walked away, and I just sort of I stood there, and he turned back around as he walked away, and he went, oh yeah, big one that. And I went, yep, big fan. And that was it. And I was, yeah, so never meet your heroes, especially if they're mildly famous guitarists, because they might just fart and walk away. But it's
the saddest story time. I've ever heard in my life.
It broke me, and then I had to watch him do the gig, and I was like, I don't really care anymore. You farted near me like that Monty Python thing. It's a bad time. But yeah, in regards to three video game characters to hang out with, Benro, do you have three, or should we nominate one each and see what chemistry comes of that?
I'm gonna say for mine, I'm gonna choose Kane, I'm gonna choose Lynch, and I'm gonna choose Nolan North from Spec Ops: The Line at the very end of the game.
Captain Walker coming in, getting up, being absolutely broken. I'll throw Dante into the mix. There's only meant to be three, but I think Dante would bring the banter. I think he would spice it up a little bit.
Meet the bad people.
Yeah. Next question from Roy Mutombo Turner, who says, if you could have one feature from older consoles returned to current gen, what would it be? For me, as silly as it sounds, it would be the little dancing save logos from the PlayStation 2. It was always interesting to see what games would look like when you got a new game. I'm going to say just themes. Why are there not more themes? Like, remember when we had Xbox was like the different card themes, and I know that like the Xbox Series X has the power to animate a background or whatever, but it's nothing. And then on the PS5, it's just whatever game you're hovering on becomes the theme, but I can't set a system theme. I want themes.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, because I had a really sick Heavy Rain theme on the PS3, and it was just like nice to look at that rain.
I'll just set a screenshot as a background or something.
Like PS4, I had the Last of Us one, sort of like the interactive, sort of the flames were going, and after the time of day, it would turn to the dark one. So it was like, I never saw the light one because I never awake in the early part of the day. But trying to think of anything that I want back, like, I don't...
Those save icons were cool too. I remember doing that, like going on the PS2s, like loading it without a disc so you could look at the memory card.
They were cool, but there's things like the internet now, so I wouldn't spend like an hour looking at them, or like, what can I do with the PS1 or PS2 when I just turn on and listen to the waves sort of whisper. I think, you know what, I want the Nintendo store to have the lovely music again. The
The eShop still feels like a really primitive browser. Like, it's still just so half-baked at the minute.
Then again, it's better than what the PlayStation store at this point when you search something and then it gets maybe later.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Something went wrong. It's like, cheers, sorry. Josh, were you going to dive in there?
I was going to. Me and you, Scott, I'm not sure where you fall on this, Ben Roy, but we disagree about the opening titles of movies and TV shows. If I watch a TV show, I will watch the opening title of it, whatever it is, whether it's Game of Thrones, whether it's, I don't know, any other show that has a title, Friends. I will watch
every single episode, you'll never skip the title sequence.
Every single time. And I appreciate that a lot of people don't want to do that. So I like that Netflix has the skip button. However, I don't like that we don't have proper boot ups anymore for our consoles because they're so fast And that's awesome in a way. But we don't have, like Ben Roy was saying, the waves of the PlayStation 2, you know, literally taking you into gaming land and seeing the big towers and all that stuff, or even the opening stinger of the original PlayStation. They were lengthy, but I like them as a kind of settling in zone. And even though I quite like the musical stingers on the PlayStation 4, for instance, on the PlayStation 5, it's not quite the same. I need something a bit more authored, a little bit, that I want to watch every time.
Benroy, you need to answer. Do you skip every credit sequence all the time? Because when Josh told me this for TV shows, I melted internally.
No, because I need to know the Cylons have a plan. I need them to tell me every episode that there's 12 of them and four, and then we still don't know who these are. And I like the little music that goes with it. And then they show me a little bit of the episode, and then they show me the intro sequence of all the names, and then they spoil a bit of the episode. I need that every time.
The only one that I leave on is Better Call Saul, because that little guitar riff is really cool.
I mean, and that little, when the little jigging fella, yeah, yes, I'm ready for it. But with the consoles, like, I mean, I can never hear it anyway, because I'm normally turning it on when the TV's off, or it defaults straight to headphones anyway, so I never hear it on the PlayStation side. But I want Phil to hear this. And, you know, a quick resume, it's a great thing for Xbox, right? But for the Xbox games, a lot of them are tied to servers, right? So if I turn Gears 5 on after turning the thing off, it's like, oh, I can't read the service. You've got to reboot the thing anyway and look at those damn thing logos every time. And
if there's no button on the menu to just let you reconnect.
I know this is Coalition. I don't care anymore. I don't want to see the thing spin around in the ice 500 times.
That's I think that's completely valid, because that's one thing that never gets talked about, that when you resume a game, even on PlayStation as well, unless they've coded a reconnect button, and then the game just goes, well, I've lost the connection, and you have to reboot it anyway. I had to do that with Doom Eternal every time.
Yeah.
So annoying. But just to bring it back to what Josh said about, like, looking forward to, I agree that the PS1's opening animation was incredible. Even the PS2's was really
Xbox as well. Xbox was like,
yeah, like super memorable. Yes.
And but GameCube.
We're in a time with like SSD and instant loading. And I literally, when the PlayStation 5 shows me that PlayStation Studios logo, I'm like, I don't need to see this. You don't need to show me this. Like, it's nice. It's nice. But put it on the trailers. Like, I'm there to play a game. I don't need, you've advertised a system with zero loading and then designed a studio logo.
I bet you hate start screens, don't you? I bet you hate a start screen where the character's like sort of sitting there brooding, waiting for you to
start. I don't mind
start.
That, because I can hit a button and do something. But if I'm just like, if the whole generational push is for less loading, why do we then have a more played out animation? Like, that's kind of crazy.
Aesthetics, man. I think that's all it is, you know? Yeah, we can skip them, but it's sometimes, not to go on about this too much, but sometimes I think it's a nice tone setter, you know? Like, it's a nice little thing to get you in the mood or get you hyped. Like, I love getting a new PlayStation exclusive and now seeing that PlayStation Studios logo pop up and seeing
the
logos, you know, all arrive. And yeah, you might not want to see that every single time, but I think it's a nice way to, you know, just kind of set a tone, ease you in to what's about to happen. What's don't like need when you get everything to be immediate all the time.
I absolutely do. If I'm juggling 10 games at once, mate, I want them loading up as soon as possible. I'm not watching 10 animations. It reminds me of like when you first turn the PS5 on, it shows you that different boot up sequence that you never get again. Unless you like reset the entire system, you can never get that again. I like the idea of maybe doing that. When you start an exclusive, you get a cool animation, and then it's just like, right, lads, you're here to play a game, so we're going to get you in from then on in. Next question from Gentleman, the Gentleman, who says, hey guys, I listen to your podcast every day, and even repeat most of them when there isn't a new one. Best podcast by far. Well, thank you very much. My question is, if you had to play one franchise of games and nothing else, what would you choose? For me, it would be The Last of Us. That sounds like a depressing way to go if you're living in The Last of Us.
The two games.
Yeah, for the rest of your days. I mean, God, you know, go for it.
I could do it. Yeah. I probably could. I've replayed The Last of Us 1 about 5 or 6 times. Like, I've been might not sound like a lot, but for me, it's a lot. Oh, it's a good question, this. Ben Roy, you got anything? Yeah. I need to have a think.
I could be tactical here, but it's either for me, it's going to be Resident Evil or Gears, but it would probably end up being like Resident Evil because all in all, I enjoy those games more. But if I were to choose Gears, I'd have things like Horde mode and stuff. But then, I don't know, for me, I'm being a bit tactical here. I love The Last of Us. Like, The Last of Us 1 is my favorite game ever, right? But if you got a franchise for the rest of the time, there's two games, and then you might not have another one for another 80 years. So for me, Resident Evil.
I think for me, I'm thinking of stuff that I could literally play over and over again or play for like hundreds and hundreds of hours. So I think for an entire franchise, it would maybe be all of the Zeldas, because I was mainly thinking Breath of the Wild because of how experimental it is. But then I was thinking, well, like obviously you have all the old school Zeldas, but at least you have a big, a series of fantastical games with gorgeous pieces of music, gorgeous worlds to explore, the variety like across that series in regards to the art styles. And then you have Breath of the Wild, which is this massive experimental like take that blows everything back up. And I don't know, for me, playing Breath of the Wild kind of makes you want to go back to those more like strict Zeldas. But then that also makes that when you do that, it makes you want to check out Breath of the Wild. So maybe that's a way that I could stave off insanity. I'd have to have something that was a long form series, I think.
That's a good shout, I think. If I had played more than two Zeldas, I think I would steal that exact choice. I'd go Fallout, because I like the idea of getting the isometric Fallouts combined with the Bethesda Fallouts and then obviously the Obsidian Fallouts. If it was just New Vegas on its own,
76.
That would probably do me. And you could play a 76, which never ends and will be constantly updated with content. Thank you, Ben Roy, for cementing this argument as just the best one of all of us, because we'd that's just, the game that just take keeps the on giving.
I mean, I've got Resident Evil 6, and that's like 30 hours to just finish one playthrough. So, you know, there you go.
That's true.
It's a hell of a thing. Next question from Jared Liebergen, who says, what's more likely, Ben Roy finally realizing that Sekiro is an amazing game or Josh finally playing Ori? Now, I have a feeling, I think that Josh finally touched Ori the other night, only for a few seconds.
Oh.
So
A few seconds of foreplay with Ori the other night. I turned it on and I had a lovely 5 minutes with it. I watched the opening introduction, a surprisingly emotional introduction, and I did a few jumps and then turned it off because I wanted to finish Code Veronica before I started it properly. So I technically have already accomplished this.
So Ben Roy never needs to admit that Sekiro is an amazing game, even though he knows it.
I feel like it started a plague with the big men with sticks are just an annoying enemy for no reason. And I've seen it pop up in more games now, and I hate it.
There's a whole stance dedicated to it in Ghost of Tsushima, the anti-stick stance. It was
if I had seen this question before we started recording or the other day, I wouldn't have played Ori because I would have held out for Ben Roy to admit it first.
And you didn't know you were getting a Series X until you happened to catch one.
The Series X was just a surprise,
Catch one in the wild.
I mean, I beat them, but all of these games we just mentioned, so let's move on. I don't need to talk about them ever again.
Okay, next question from Willie Araya, who says, hope you guys are doing great. If you could change one thing about your favorite game slash franchise, what would it be and why? Currently, I'm playing new Pokemon Snap and having a blast. And then he sent us a screenshot. Keep the content train on track. Is there anything that you like from your favorite franchise where you go like, oh, I wish this was tightened up a bit?
It's a toughie. Mass Effect 3, conversation system in Mass Effect 3. Where you have agency in that game. You know, we talked about it when we did our podcast on it, but the difference in your Shepard between Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2, and then Mass Effect 3 is just night and day. In Mass Effect 3, your Shepard is practically an authored character that BioWare has written that you kind of get some say into it, as opposed to the way that's handled in the first two games, where it's very much whoever you want it to be, and you have more control over what you want to ask, how you want to answer. The sheer act of removing a neutral response in 3, I think, is indicative of how they approached it, because otherwise you're on a path. You're on either a good path or you're on a renegade path. Mm-hmm. And that's all you have to flex your characterization skills. Whereas in the other two games, even though it was obviously still limited in a lot of ways, it felt much bigger, it felt much more expansive. And I just wish that system was in 3 more. Like, I love Mass Effect. It is probably my favorite franchise, but I wouldn't play it over and over again if it was all I had to play. I just feel like that should have, I wish that was there.
Well, when we went through the Legendary Edition and we did like a series of podcasts and stuff, like getting to 3 and realizing/remembering how much they box you in was the thing that made me go like, I actually hate this. And like, I hate how much they've they've like siphoned you into these specific lanes. And that's the reason that I still haven't finished Mass Effect 3 in the Legendary Edition. And for as much as I adore 1 and 2, like I just got to 3 and it was just that thing of like realizing, all your dialogue options, like you said, are mostly binary. It's either super positive or super negative, and that stuff just makes it feel so regimented compared to the first two. Ben Roy, any thoughts or games to suggest?
I would either add a decent crouch mechanic to like say the first 3 Metal Gears, where you don't have to crouch and then you go forward and you lie down. It's a bit cumbersome. That always got me, especially towards the end with some of those games. Or like say I would add a mode to the Gears games where it wasn't sort of like more enemies weren't as spongy. It's more like a couple bullets, they're dead. A couple bullets, you're dead. Sort of thing. I sort of like more like I'm not going to put 30 bullets into a locust and they're still going to be staggering. I want to put like say 3 or 4 and then it's down.
I really like tactical gears game. That'd be kind of cool. Like nailing headshots and different limb damage and stuff to like get through hordes.
I love it when you do the harder difficulties in games and then not only for you do you die quicker, but like also the enemy, like in Spec Ops the Line, I feel like when you're doing the harder, like it's you or them. Like if they get a shot on you, you're gone. If you get a shot on them in the right point, you're gone. So I like that sort of like ante up in the ante.
Yeah, that sounds cool. For me, I'll just throw in the Yakuza Judgment stuff. I mentioned this on last week's UBP with Jules, but I think that as much as I adore that franchise, like sometimes when the story really kicks in, you just want the next thing. And a lot of those games, they have such massive open worlds, or they have such detailed open worlds that are packed with mini games and things like that, that when you get to the main story, it's like, okay, the next plot B is on the other side of the city. So just run all the way there, talk to a character. Right, now run all the way back and talk to someone else. And it's sometimes that stuff can get bogged down. I think that sometimes they can give you one too many fetch quests in very sort of like JRPG or MMO style, where the narrative is so good or the character development is so good that you just want to crack on with it. And I think sometimes it can get in its own way. In the final third of Judgment, for example, it's just like everything is kicking off, but you're still like sprinting across the entire city just to get the next cutscene. That stuff can be a bit annoying. Next question from Jack Griffiths, who says, with the last 18 months being pretty crappy, has there been any games that you've played that became a hidden gem for you? Not necessarily a new game, but something that helped you get through the last few months. Old school stuff, I assume, because we've all been like with the lapse of new releases, all three of us have just dove back into our back catalogs. Like Ben Roy's been on Alice the Madness Returns, or at least he bought it anyway. And I've been on Knights of the Old Republic. We played through old Splinter Cells. I've played a bit of Fantavision because I got PlayStation Now, played Blood Rain. It's but in terms of a hidden gem thing, not necessarily too hidden, but I guess I would shout out Spiritfarer. That was the first thing that I really spent time on last year, where it was just a solid 2 months of just living on that game. Did absolutely everything in it. Absolutely love it. Beautiful, beautiful game. Like the whole core message about trying to make sure that you can help people as much as you, especially elderly people, as much as you can before they pass away or move on, I think is a hell of a message. And that game ruined me by the end of it. But it's a gorgeous game and I would totally recommend that. It is like a farming sim kind of semi-platformer thing, but I think the actual core of how it brings everything together is really, really cool. And I don't feel like Spiritfarer got talked about that much towards the end of last year. So that would be mine.
It's difficult, man, because like you said, we've played through so many older games and so many kind of underrated games, I suppose. Like I could shout out something like Mundawn, which I really liked, or The Forgotten City, which I'm playing now. But a lot of them were quite short, so I would definitely recommend them. But something that I kind of like sunk my teeth into over, you know, this past year that I didn't expect to, I guess, would be The Sinking City, which is that Lovecraft detective game.
Is that not The Forgotten City, mate?
Not The Forgotten City, mate. It's The Sinking City.
Right.
Sinking City. That's the one. If I say it enough times, it might be able to just be etched into your brain. Which is like this weird Lovecraft by way of Sherlock Holmes detective game that is incredibly ropey, that still has some bugs, that is definitely like a double A game. But it just kind of like got its hooks into me in a way. And I really liked the daft characters. I really liked the imagination of the world. And that was like an open world title where I was putting 20 hours in. I just thought, this is not the best game in the world, but it's engaging enough for me to not want to put it down. And I think often you kind of like need those titles to freshen you up a little bit from the onslaught of AAA blockbusters.
Especially when like lockdown started with like really hefty games like Last of Us 2. It was like I kind of need something a little bit less. Benroy, what comes to mind?
Well, I've only really been playing hefty games. I'm looking at a list
hefty
here.
Old games though. Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, I've not touched Metal Gear Solid 4 yet. That's in the chat.
So
I went through all the Metal Gears. I've almost done all the first three. I've almost done all the first three Splinter Cells. I'm realizing how phenomenal Chaos Theory is again. Like in my mind, it was just the same as like 1 and Pandora Tomorrow, but it really isn't. Like it's just like leagues above it, and just Fisher cracking wires like got ya. And then like having fun with the every lad he grabs, like, you're gonna tell me something, I'm gonna knock you out. Do you know when you when you hit the floor, you don't just go black, you feel it and stuff like that. And just that's really sort of like all these samples.
Need a Ben Roy voice pack for Chaos Theory, I think.
Yeah, all right, mate, you got any greens? But it's just having Sam Fisher just cracking wires in that one was really sort of a weird joy. And then an off-the-cuff one, like, sorry, I found Wildlands strangely amusing. I'm relaxing, just putting a podcast on, not listening to that game at all, and just going around Bolivia and just doing Tom Clancy stuff.
Living
the soul of Tom Clancy recently, I'm going to say, so that.
Actually, I'll totally, as a compare, because, yeah, one other thing that absolutely dominated, like, in my playtime for a long time, I think I put over 80-odd hours into it, is Immortals Fenyx Rising, which I feel like just no one wanted to play,
Tom
no one
Clancy's
cared about.
Immortals Fenyx Rising.
If they could have attached the brand, they would have done. But that was literally just Ubisoft looking at the competition and just hybridizing everything that worked. And it's very much a Breath of the Wild clone. But it plays really well, the combat's awesome, and it's just really Moorish, it's really addictive. There's always something else, either within your eyesight to go and do another puzzle, another enemy, something like that, or just you ping up the map and there's a bunch of little question marks and stuff that it's so easy to just lose hours and hours and hours into that game. I think it's the best thing Ubisoft have made in a long time. I just think it's weirdly very focused. It's quite a small map, and I feel like they actually, like, all those weird lessons that they keep trying to apply to Assassin's Creed and Ghost Recon and all these big bloated games, they reduce that down, and there is a really good treadmill there, really good set of gameplay loops that if they just make smaller games, they become really enjoyable way more consistently.
I kind of have one now, and I'm jumping back in. The Forest. I played The Forest last year with a friend, and that was just that wasn't what I was expecting. It was a fun, scary experience, and it's got things like, if you get a bit bored of the scary things, I'm not gonna say where they are on the island, you can make your buildings invincible and just keep playing the game and stuff like that. And then there's so much to discover on the ground. It feels like The Descent. At one point, it feels like all these weird cannibal films. There's an ending as well that happens, and a lot of things happen in that game, and it's well worth experiencing with friends or on your own. And you can put on happy peace mode and just build if you want as well.
Sounds good. I remember when you discovered that, we all like weird. It's like, it feels like another lifetime stuff that we played like at the beginning of the last 18 months, but yeah. Lots of worthwhile stuff. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below, I guess, in regards to what games have got you through the last 18 months. Because this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Hilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Happy birthday, Kane Lynch 2.
And Josh Brown.
You're so old.
Happy birthday, 11 Kane
years
Lynch old. Too.
11 whole years of nothing but love, but we'll catch
almost
you next time. Almost
old enough to drink. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Get a tree?
No.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.